Bubba Starling into deep left field, and that is gone. And Bubba Starling has just looked outstanding this spring and summer. Salvi hooks it into the corner and gone into the seats. And the recorded crowd roars for Salvi as he rounds the bases.
Man,
that's the first extra base hit tonight for the Royals.
Salvador Perez, Bubba Starling go deep last night. That accounted for all three runs for the Royals in their exhibition opener against the Houston Astros at the K last night. Royals fall 6-3. They'll take on the Astros again this afternoon. Glenn Sparkman will be on the hill for the boys in blue. And Houston, of course, in town for that exhibition game this afternoon. The Royals go to St. Louis tomorrow and then open up season Friday in Cleveland. Mike Montgomery struggled a little bit last night, but it is just an exhibition game. And also the Royals option Jake Newbury back down to the minors, even though there's no minors. So
yeah,
congrats, Jake. You don't get a play anymore. That's how that works. It is a little bit different. You're not going to be able to option guys down.
Yeah.
And then how do you stay sharp and everything else? It's a different dynamic, no doubt about it. All right, Pee Wee baseball from last night.
Yeah, the first round scores there at Concordia for the state tournament. Concordia Chevy Buick beat Clyde 10-0. Lynn over Pike Valley 4-3. Wakanda wins over Clifton 7-3. And Belleville beat the Smith Center Warriors 13-4. So that sets up the quarterfinals coming up here this evening. 7 o'clock games at Meyer Field. Smith Center Chiefs take on Lynn. And at Jensen Field, it's Washington against Concordia Chevy Buick. Then games over at Meyer Field, Beloit Hornets against Wakanda at 8:30. Approximately here this evening, and then the Concordia Lions will take on Belleville approximately 8:30 at Jensen Field there in the 8:30 games. So the brackets are updated and posted at ncksports.com. So if you missed any of that and want to see the full bracket, it's right there. Also, the K-18 state bracket is at ncksports.com. K-18 state will start on Saturday in Lucas. So all that right at your fingertips on the website.
All right, high school sports. Let's update you on that. Of course, we were telling you yesterday about the governor going to share thoughts on the executive orders that she was going to put into effect. And Governor Kelly was asked about how to safely conduct sports.
Yeah, I know that there have been a number of conversations about how can you conduct sports safely. You know, they've even gone so far as to think about switching them so that you take your spring sports, which tend to be more individual, and move them back to the fall, and then move the fall sports into the spring. Fall sports tend to be more contact sports, football, basketball, for instance. So I know that there are conversations going on like that, and the fact of the matter is it's incumbent upon our school districts to ensure that any activities that they sanction are conducted in a manner that protects the safety of the participants, but also the folks around them.
So that's Governor Kelly sharing the thoughts on, well, possibly fall, going to spring. I don't know how logical that is. I mean, there's some thought to it. Keisha said not too long ago they hadn't really considered
it. Yeah, the executive director said that.
Yeah, Bill Fafflick said that. So I don't know if they're not communicating or what's going on when it comes to that.
I don't think they are. I don't either. Honestly really don't know if she's had any real discussions with Keisha at all.
I don't.
Or her office. Anyway.
I don't feel like it because Keisha was surprised by the announcement about coming down with the executive orders last week.
Yeah.
So, you know, we really don't have any more answers than we did yesterday. August 10th through September 8th is what I read in regards to no extracurricular activities, which I know the Beloit High School football camp is August 10th through the 14th, so I would say that would be a no-go. But they can still do summer conditioning and weights and all that. However, the Kansas State Board of Education has to approve this. And they will vote on the executive orders coming up, or at least the plan is, from what we understand, they're going to have a 10 a.m. meeting tomorrow. And so they are supposedly going to vote on this after a 24-hour review. And as of Friday, 7 of the 10 Kansas State Board of Education members were undecided. 70%, 7 of the 10 were undecided as to whether or not they would be in agreement with this plan from the governor's office. So there could be a lot of different things that could change, no doubt, when it comes to what takes place with schools and sports in the state of Kansas. You may be wondering, well, what are other schools or states doing? The Nebraska School Activity Association yesterday announced that they are preparing to begin the high school fall sports seasons as scheduled. Practices for football, volleyball, cross-country, girls, golf, boys, tennis, and softball will start August the 10th. So Nebraska is a go. Iowa, as we mentioned yesterday, is a go. Now in California, a little bit different. High school football, volleyball, gymnastics, and other fall sports will not start until winter under a revised calendar issued Monday by the California Interscholastic Federation. And the calendar outlines dates for the last day of section playoffs and the last day of regional and state championships in California. Most of those dates fall for fall sports are in March and April, meaning most fall sports will start in December and January in the state of California. So we, and then I think I saw just the other day, Missouri is planning on going as scheduled.
Yep.
So you got Missouri, you have Nebraska, two neighboring states, but they're not in bad as bad a shape when it comes to cases, from what I understand, and so forth and so on. Kansas has not done as good a job as Nebraska has, and I don't know about Missouri's numbers. I know Nebraska numbers haven't been too bad from what I've read. Iowa's moving forward. I don't know where Colorado's situation is right now, and I do not know about Oklahoma, although I'm pretty sure Oklahoma's going to move on as is. Mm-hmm. So those are your neighboring states. So you've got two that are moving forward, and in Iowa not too far away moving forward. And, of course, on the West Coast, California, it's a different dynamic. So we'll see what happens when it comes to high school sports. A couple things that maybe don't tie to sports in a way, but that is the mandate, the two mandates or executive orders that the governor wants to put into action after the Board of Education votes on it. And let's tell you, first of all, the executive order 20-58 will also include athletics and all other extracurricular activities. And that's basically saying, you know, there's no school until after Labor Day, until September the 8th. And that affects all schools. For instance, that'll take place if it's passed by the Kansas State Board of Education. Executive Order 20-59 will mandate face coverings for all students, faculty, staff, vendors, and other visitors to public or private K through 12 school buildings or facilities. Notice public or private when it comes to the face coverings. Exceptions will be made for eating, activities that cannot be safely conducted with a mask or other face covering. This one really astounds me a little bit. Children who are not students and who are 5 years of age or under would be exempt from the mask. I'll get back to that one. Persons with a medical condition, mental health condition, or disability that prevents wearing a face covering. Persons who are deaf or hard of hearing or communicating with a person who is deaf or hard of hearing where the ability to see the mouth is essential for communication. Persons for whom wearing a face covering would create a risk to the person related to their work. The executive order will mandate 6 feet of social distancing except for in-person instruction in classrooms when masks or other face coverings are worn. The order will also require hand sanitizer in classrooms and that all students and faculty must sanitize their hands no less than once every hour. Finally, all individuals entering the buildings, the school buildings, must have their temperatures checked before entering the building. Okay, a couple things here. I have a six-year-old who's going to be in first grade. Do you think he's going to wear a mask all day long?
Doubtful.
In some places, they've said third or fourth grade and above wear a mask, but below, it's kind of an optional thing. To me, that's the way to go here. But Kansas, according to this order, children who are not students and are 5 years of age or under are exempt from this, or not necessarily exempt, but they're exception, which tells you that, what? If you're six, like my son who's going first grade, he has to wear a mask during school all day. I don't see how that's going to work. I'm glad I'm not a teacher that's going to have to deal with that, or administrator. Here's another thing that I thought about yesterday, and this could be a good and bad thing. So the last point of this, all individuals entering must have their temperatures checked before entering the school buildings. Here's a pro to that. That might cut down on the flu outbreak in schools.
Yeah.
Because you take a temperature and you're going to send them home. Mm-hmm. So that might not only keep COVID-19 out of your school, but it also may prevent the flu from spreading as well. So there's a pro.
Yeah.
Here's a con. Do you know you can take pain reliever and reduce your temperature to where you could still get in school, and then say by noon you've got that fever, and you could then expose people, whether it be the flu or COVID or whatever. Mm-hmm. And here's a really interesting point, and I was thinking about this just for our family, and it applies to many, many families in different situations. So think about this for a second. So you have, let's say you have three kids. We have three kids. They all go to school. I'll just use my family as an example. Three kids, 6, 11, and 14. So we got two in elementary, one's a first grader, and one in high school. So two schools mm-hmm. are involved here. You with me?
Mm-hmm.
And they go to school. They ride the bus or whatever the case may be, or my wife will drop them off at school. And then plus my wife works at the school. So there's that too. So four individuals will have to have their temperatures checked before going into the building. So my wife has a busy day of work, right? She goes to school and the kids get dropped off or they ride the bus in the school and they get their temperatures checked and one of the three has 100.6. So the kids got to go home. So now what's my wife going to do? She's going to have to go home.
Mm-hmm.
Or I got to cut out of work and go home because we don't have a built-in grandma or grandpa. We're transplants.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have old good old grandma and grandpa to come over every 2 hours and check on the kids like some people in town have. And that's fine. That's what they have.
Yeah.
We don't. And there are a lot of people that are in our boat, too, from that standpoint. And so then what happens if people really need to get to work that have a job, and so they don't work at the school, but they have a regular job, and they don't have a lot of sick day accrued, or they only have so much that's available to them, they're going to probably do what? Probably, honestly, people do this all the time, is, I'm a kid, I'm going to get that pain reliever, and I'm going to get him to where he can pass and get into school, and then by 3 o'clock when he gets out of school, that fever could be 101, 102, whatever it might be, but you got him in because the temperature check you passed at the beginning when you checked in the school.
Mm-hmm.
You got me there? So people may very well do that. And that obviously helped the spread of whatever it may be. So there's a pro and a con to the temperature check thing. If everybody's honest about it, then it could actually help against the flu and other things to spread mm-hmm. because we've had flu outbreaks, it seems like, every single year for years now. But if you're a person, let's say you're a single mom of three kids or a single dad with three kids, and you've got a full-time job to provide for your kids, and you take them to school, and you got two at elementary and one at the high school, and you drop them off, and now all of a sudden you're ready to drive to work, and then, hold on. Mary has a fever. What do you do?
Yeah.
What do you do? So now you got to go take a sick day. But eventually, what's happen if your kid has COVID? 14-day quarantine, right?
Yes.
You got 2 weeks of sick time. What happens if another kid gets it? Spreads across your family. You get it. You're not gonna have enough sick time to cover. So no. there's so many things that is going to be crazy about the situation, and I don't envy the schools and administrators at all. Now you want to go one step further when it comes to sports. How are you going to handle that? You know, are you going to test every kid before temperature-wise? Because that's a long time from 8 a.m. until 3:30 or 4 for practice. Mm-hmm. That's 7-8 hours. That's a shift. So are they going to get retested temperature-wise before they go to practice? I would say they should.
I would think probably so.
I would hope so.
It's a new realm that you're going into.
But we have no guidelines about any of that right now.
No.
Because Keisha's trying to figure out what's going on with the state.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know the right answers. I don't know if anybody does, but it's going to be quite the challenge for so many people.
There's no doubt. And no matter how you decide to come back and get things going in the climate we're in right now in this country, there's going to be challenges
mm-hmm.
no matter what way you decide to do it. And so it is, I guess it's just about getting back into getting into a little bit of a different routine mm-hmm. Of what you do. There's definitely going to be people and coaches and teachers that aren't going to be huge fans of it probably, but
sure.
You know, I guess you do what you got to do to get your kids back into school, I think would be the first thing and first and foremost. And if you can figure all that out and make it work, that's great. But yes, there are going to be some issues of, you know, not every kid's going to react the same way to that mask. I saw somebody last night that's like, oh, my 6-year-old nephew doesn't have any problems with it.
Well, that's your 6-year-old.
Your 6-year-old nephew does a good job then. He's able to deal with the new thing in his life.
Didn't we just
not
talk
every
about one size doesn't fit all? Isn't
exactly.
That, that's what cracks me up. That same person probably is arguing about how the state shouldn't have one size fit all for all their policy on schools or this or that or whatever, but yet says their six-year-old nephew's fine, so Everybody should wear masks.
And she just like goes into this long thing about how it starts at home with the parents making sure that they wear the mask. And I'm like, well, what do you do with special needs kids? What do you do with kids?
I have one.
Exactly. What do you do with kids with autism that aren't supposed to wear them? That it's not, you know, for their health. They're not supposed to do it, you know? And so it's not a broad brush here that you can paint and say, oh, my six-year-old nephew's fine with it.
Yeah.
Well, good. I'm glad.
Right.
That's great for your six-year-old nephew. I'm not going to take anything away from him. But not every kid from age 1 to 18 is going to react the same to all of this. Or 17, I guess, because you're an adult when you're 18. But you get my point. It's like, I wouldn't even like make that comment. If you want to say, yeah, my six-year-old nephew isn't having a problem with it, but you don't need the whole paragraph of it starts at home.
Well, that's about like saying that my 80-year-old grandpa got COVID and survived, so no big deal.
Yeah.
Well, there's exceptions to every rule.
Exactly.
I mean, Jack Nicklaus beat COVID-19, but I know people in their 80s that haven't.
Yeah. And it's like, We all know by now that not every human body and every human being is the same and reacts the same to everything that's thrown at them.
Some people get the flu more often than others. Some never get the flu.
Yeah.
You know, some people can eat pizza constantly, like my brother-in-law, and never gain weight. And I eat a pizza and I gain 7 pounds. We're all different, you know? I just love when people do the one-size-fit-all thing. And that's one of the arguments against the federal government and state governments across the country is, listen, we're doing fine in our area. Just because you're having a whole bunch of problems in Wichita and meat processing plants in Wyandotte and Johnson counties, why are you shoving this down our throat when we've done a much better job? Now, granted, there's some cases that have gone up in other counties as well. Of course, we've seen in Mitchell County. Last I saw Friday morning, it was 18 active cases in Mitchell County. Jewell County now has a 6th and 7th positive case. So some of those numbers are going up a little bit, but the one-size-fit-all situation is a strong argument, I think, against the governing bodies in our country. It's not, not everybody is having a huge problem with COVID-19. Not everybody.
Yeah.
But certain places are, and so that's what makes the news. So that's the high school perspective. So, based on everything I see, is you're okay with the extracurricular activities till August 10th. We'll see if Keisha says anything. They're going to wait on the Kansas Board of Education to decide what they're going to do first.
Mm-hmm.
And Keisha, I think, is going to wait till the end of the week before they do anything, and they might need more time. But they may say, hey, keep doing what you're doing for now until we figure it out.
Yeah.
That's what I would do if I was Keisha.
I'm like, we brought up, we're okay until August 10th. Like, where does the August 10th date come into effect for Kansas? Because they were supposed to start the 17th of August with practices.
I read in a story yesterday. It was actually, I don't know. And this story just says August. It just says August.
Yeah.
So I'll see if I can find
it. But I think she said August 10th.
I thought she said August 10th. I'm pretty sure she did.
I could be wrong about that.
There's
a lot of stuff in there.
It was in another article, too.
Yeah.
So it's not like somebody just pulled that date out of thin air.
Yeah, and I know that's
Yeah, there it is right there. August 10th through. She said the order would delay schools from doing any student instruction, including athletics or any other extracurricular activities, from August 10th to September 8th after Labor Day. Yeah, I have a theory on this. Here's my theory.
Okay.
here's my theory. So why do you wait to August 10th? Because, that's another, 20 days from now?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're really worried about the spread, wouldn't you just put the kibosh on it already right away? Here's my theory on that. They're not being able to govern all these traveling sports tournaments and everything else. So you put the kibosh on summer workouts and conditioning programs that are confined into one school or building, like Beloit or Lakeside, Osborne, Smith Center, whatever, Concordia. And you do that, but then all these tournaments happen in Wichita and Kansas City. People from all over the place are coming. That's definitely not fair. And so I think it's tied to, because by August 10th, pretty much all the traveling stuff's done.
Yeah.
All the nationals are done, I think, about that date. That's a theory I have.
Yeah.
Because this pertains to the they're talking about student instruction, but mainly you're talking about athletics or any extracurricular activities. August 10th is the beginning date to September 8th. That's my theory. I can't prove it.
It could be because you just don't want to deal with the questions like why can they do that?
Why can AAU and
MAYB teams be practicing?
They can travel all over the state and people can come from all over other states and come to Wichita, but we can't stay in our own confined bubble that we have and have summer weights.
Yeah.
I think that's part of it.
Or
the state's going to hope Keisha puts a kibosh on it, but why did the state say August 10th? I don't know for sure.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that question
is I understand why all these other states are saying August 10th, because that's literally the day they're supposed to start practicing for high school sports.
Right.
But Kansas is always a week behind, at least.
Yeah. Well, I know football camp for boys, August 10th through the 14th.
Is it?
Mm-hmm. Or the week before they're supposed to really get going.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know why August 10th for sure. That'd be a good question for the governor. I don't think that the governor was asked that question.
Yeah.
I can't.
And she doesn't stick around very long after that's all done. Once she's ready to go, people are still asking questions. She puts her mask on and leaves.
Yeah, she asked the one about the sports one.
Yeah, she did. Yep.
Which, you know,
that was one of the early questions they asked.
Right. Yep. That's one of the first ones they asked. Okay, so we've talked about Kansas, Nebraska, California, Iowa, and some other states. Now, what about college sports? The MIAA. Their first games are set to begin on September 12th. That includes Fort Hays State, Emporia State, Washburn, Pittsburgh State, among others, Northwest Missouri State. Now the league won't kick off until October the 3rd. The league said it would explore moving miss games if there is an open or added date in the fall or to the spring semester. Now this is a first I've heard of, where you're going to play six or seven games in the fall and then you're going to maybe pick up where you left off in the spring, which I don't know how that's going to work. Mm. That would really benefit teams that had, you know, injuries and all this.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, what if you're 0-7? Do you really even bother playing your last three games in the spring?
Yeah.
I'm just throwing that one out there. If you're 7-0, you lose all your momentum, so forth and so on. Here's the commissioner, Mike Racy, saying, listen, we're not giving up like so many others.
I want fans to realize how hard people in Kansas City and on every one of our MIAA campuses are working to try and salvage some sports season this fall. We look around and there are a number of conferences that are throwing in the towel and giving up, and that's not us. That's not the MIAA way. We're going to look at every possible option to allow our student athletes and coaches to have a chance to compete this fall. And, you know, we may, if things continue to get bad, you know, we'll go down with the ship. You know, we'll be the last ones to jump. But we are committed to trying to make this work.
Well, I think that's encouraging for athletes in MIAA. If you want to play, they're going to go as far as they can with it. I think it's kind of refreshing.
It is. There's a lot of people that are, like he said, just like, you know, we're done. And it's like, why now?
I'm going to tell you, I'll give you an analogy of this, and this has happened in Kansas and other states as well, and that is a comparable. So the MIAA is saying, hey, we're not just going to rush and quit like some of these other leagues have or give up so easily. But I know when it comes to the pool situation in many communities across the country, in some places, people pulled the plug on the pool before even trying to come up with any kind of plan because they didn't want to mess with it. They didn't want to waste their time. They didn't want to spend the energy, and they didn't want to provide for the community and just said, you know what, we're kicking to the curb. It's easier to do it that way. And then there's other communities that have gone through a lot of headaches to try to keep a pool open so the kids can have something to do or go or have an outlet since so many other things have been taken away because of COVID-19. That'd be a good analogy.
Yeah, it would.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, we're doing it now because we don't want to deal with how do we do it,
right.
You know, when it does come up.
It's a little bit of a selfish move.
Yeah.
In some cases, not all cases. Of course, you could say it's a selfish move that you want to have a pool open or that you want to play sports when there's a bigger thing going on like a virus, but to each their own. All right, the NFL has reached an agreement on testing. So the NFL has made some strides here. The NFL and the Players Association have an agreement in place to conduct daily COVID-19 testing. This will stretch over the first 2 weeks of training camp, and after that, the league will look at positivity rates. If the rate drops below 5% for players along with individuals in Tier 1 and Tier 2, they will move testing to every other day. Players will also need multiple negative tests before they're allowed to be in the club facilities for physicals and team activities. Tier 1 includes players, coaches, trainers, physicians, and necessary personnel. Tier 2 includes GMs, team presidents, and football operations, among others. The memo highlights that the pre-entry testing period will include 2 days of virtual meeting in between tests. Players will be tested on day 1 and day 4 of training camp with 2 days of remote education in between. Day 5 of this pre-entry testing period is when players can enter the club facility and is also when the daily testing begins. For veterans who report to camp on July 28th, the earliest they can go through a physical is August the First, the chief medical officer of the NFL, Dr. Alan Sills, noted that test results are expected to be turned around within 24 hours. He also relayed that the league has contracted with a national lab to make sure their testing did not take resources away from local markets. So the NFL, that's what they're doing in regards to testing. Them and NFLPA, it looks like, have agreed or in principle to that. And Andy Reid, head coach of the Chiefs, on how the first few days of these rookie camps, training camps, whatever it'll be, how it's going to look, because they're going to have to take tests just like everybody else.
Rick Burkholder and Mitch Reynolds have done a phenomenal job of setting everything up to try to be COVID safe and the best we possibly can. So that's where we start. We're starting with a couple of days of testing for the players. They do back-to-back tests, and then they'll actually, from there, work their physical, get their equipment, and then head with Ted to do whatever media obligations they potentially have. And there are a couple of days for that. That takes you into 4 days here. And then there's a point where we're going to be able to have the guys lift and meet with them and do a potential walkthrough with them. So that's kind of how that sets up. And that goes for an extended period of time.
All right. So it's going to take some time is what we're saying in regards to players to be cleared and ready to really get the going, unlike the way it used to be prior to COVID-19. And good news for the Chiefs, as all six of their rookies have signed or verbally agreed to deals, including first-round draft pick running back out of LSU, Clyde Edwards-Helaire. That got done yesterday. So the Chiefs just continue to knock the ball out of the park when it comes to handling all their offseason stuff. The Chiefs are one of just seven teams that have had their protocol approved by the NFL in regards to their plans for COVID and this and that. There'll be others that'll obviously get approved, but the Chiefs are one of the first three, and now there's seven that were approved as of yesterday afternoon. If you're excited about NFL preseason football, don't be. The 2020 preseason looks like it'll be scrapped entirely, as the NFL has offered the NFLPA to play zero exhibition contests this summer. This is a major step as both the owners and union try to hammer out each and every detail for what will be a very unique 2020 season, as we know by now. So there was some dialogue about having just one preseason game after they had decided to cut preseason in half from 4 to 2 games. And now it looks like the NFL will agree to no exhibition games, which we've said all along. The NFL would be really, really stupid if they're going to fight having a couple preseason games.
Yeah.
That's just not, you know, you hear sometimes you got to pick your battles. Pick your battles.
Yeah.
You're going to wage a war, fine, but pick your battles. Don't grab every battle that you can link onto, because that's not going to be good for you in the act of war. So the Chiefs, of course, have had a great offseason. The question is going to be, does it matter this year?
Yeah.
They're supposed to start the season on that Thursday night. Was it September 6th or 8th? Or I don't have
8th,
the calendar.
I think
it's the 8th against the Texans in Kansas City or Arrowhead, and very well could be no fans in attendance. And Chris Jones got his $85 million max deal. It's $80 million over 4 years and then $5 million incentives. And Chris Jones, he was on a Zoom conference call yesterday, and he said he's happy to be staying in Kansas City.
Brett Veach, my dog, Brent Tillis, the way he structured everything, he was able to make sure that not only he signed me, but signed Pat, and get this thing done. And I'm just so excited to spend the long haul on the back end of my career with the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, the organization drafted me. They took a chance. Thanks to Ryan Nutt. I can never forget Ryan Nutt for the chance and that he took on me, a kid out of Mississippi State with ambitions and goals. And I'm absolutely ready to work, man. I always envisioned my career as being a Chief, and thankfully I'm there for the long haul.
Interesting part, not surprised by this, but Patrick Mahomes, after he got his deal done, he texted Chris Jones, basically said, hey, man, let's get it done. Left some money on the table for you. So Mahomes could have got more than he got, which is hard to believe. Of course, he got a lot of guaranteed money, which we had talked about all along, all summer, that might be what really gets the thing done. And Jones talks about how Mahomes, helped get this thing done.
Crazy story. Actually, when Pat deal got done, as soon as this deal got done, Pat texted me and said, let's get this thing done. I left something on the table. Let's get this thing done. And that's when I had the security that, you know, the men that you going to work something out, I was confident in that, and to make sure that they were going to get something done.
Andy Reid says Chris Jones, he's committed and ready to go.
congratulations to Chris Jones. This is so well deserved. He's done everything that he's needed to do to become a top defensive tackle in the National Football League. He probably could be the same thing at defensive end on the outside as he is on the inside. He just he's very talented. He brings a great personality to our football team. Nothing's impossible in his mind, and that's the way he goes about it. So I've been proud of the commitment that he's given to the organization and how he's handled himself, again, in the weight room, in the classroom, on the field, and then in the community. It's been tremendous.
Brad Veach says that Jones has just scratched the surface.
We're certainly excited to formally announce our contract extension with the CEO of Sac Nation, Chris Jones. Over the last few years, Chris has really proven to be an elite player at his position and really one of the best defensive players in the National Football League. With that being said, Chris is equally as talented off the field. You know, our fans love him. Our community loves him. And again, just can't say how excited and thrilled we are to continue his career here. And for how much he's accomplished already, we certainly feel he's just scratching the surface with his age and his talents. We're certainly expecting more great things to come.
9 sacks last year. Chris Jones missed the playoff game due to injury, but played well in the Super Bowl. 15 sacks in 2018. He's in his prime at the age of 25. I still don't know about this contract fully, but it is what it is. I'm a little bit more concerned about this contract. Mahomes, you can give him whatever he wants. You got to take care of your franchise quarterback. But I don't know if this will come back and bite the Chiefs or not. The one really good thing I can say about it is that he is just 25, not 29 or 30, signing this deal. So Chris Jones will be with the Chiefs for at least the next 4 seasons. Mahomes under contract for the next 12. And everybody, all their top players are signed and ready to go for this year. And then as we had Sermon Petro and 810 WHB Kansas City, there's no wiggle room now much with the cap the next couple years. So this is the Chiefs are all in. And they're going for championships next 2 years. And then 3 years from now, when Mahomes' number kicks in, and you have Jones' number on the books and Clark, unless you cut him or something, the Chiefs are not going to – that's when it's going to be more challenging. So the next 2 years are important for the Chiefs to get another ring or two possibly. Chris Jones said yesterday we're going to get 5-plus Super Bowl rings. Well, he won't be around for all of them because I don't think he'll be around after this 4-year contract. Could be wrong because there won't be money there for him probably in 4 years possibly. And then you're going to have guys like Sammy Watkins will not be on this team, I would think, after next year or the season. Tardif won't be. You're going to restructure some deals probably for Schwartz and Kelsey, renegotiate and push some money back. Maybe Tyrann Mathieu as well. You probably can't afford Charvarius Ward when he's available to be on the market. So you got lots of questions on what the Chiefs are going to have to do. But right now, they've got all their key guys under contract and ready to go. So, all aboard the Chiefs Express.
Yeah, Brent Veach has done a pretty good job of working with that salary cap and making sure everything works so far. So, we'll see what happens and get through these next 2 years probably because you feel good about what you have. And like I said, after that, you got to make some decisions and we'll see how good Veach is for sure.
And the Chiefs know that, certainly.
Yeah.
All right, the NBA bubble, is it burst or is it working? Well, really, honestly, so far it's working. Of the 346 players tested for COVID-19 on the NBA campus in Orlando since test results were last announced on July 13th, 0 have returned confirmed positive tests. That's great news.
Yes.
University of Oklahoma, 100 players tested, only one was positive. That's good news.
Yes.
If you actually look at the percentages of Major League Baseball players and personnel and NHL, the numbers are, there's very, 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 very few positive tests.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's under one, well under 1%.
Yeah.
So it's not as big of a deal maybe as some people are making it out to be or not, you know? I mean,
I think we hit where NBA is kind of a different situation, I think, because they're telling people don't come in. So mm-hmm. those are the people that are tested in the bubble. Mm-hmm. So what I want to know is, like, when people get healthy, right? When they get their done with their test, you know, Russell Westbrook as an example,
mm-hmm.
is he going to be allowed to come right back in? And who comes with, like, do they bring anything with them when they come back in the bubble?
Mm-hmm.
Would be the only thing that I would wonder about, you know, like, who do they contact and how's it all going to work with that part of it? Because it's great. For me, it's like, okay, the people that are there then, That's the only people that are allowed in this bubble the rest of the season.
Right.
Because we know there's no contamination right
there. Yes, right.
But obviously that's not how it's going to work. They're not going to say, Russell, you can't play anymore, even if you test negative.
You know, one thing that people may be thinking, and I know I've thought the same thing, is that we're talking about getting a quick turnaround within 24 hours, NFL, of getting results for the COVID-19 test. Interesting article by the LA Times, Kevin Baxter. I don't know if you've seen this, but here's how his story starts. On July 2nd, Dr. Adrian Burrows, a family medicine physician in Central Florida, saw a patient who feared he might have contracted COVID-19. So he had the patient tested. He submitted that test to a lab. 16 days later, he's still waiting for the results of that test. That same day, less than half an hour away in Orlando, about 180 players and staff members from four Major League Soccer teams had a similar test performed upon checking in their hotel, and their results came back within hours. The doctor says, I have a major problem with that. What's happening? Pretty simple. Athletes, all of this stuff, entertainment, these people are jumping the line of regular Joes and Schmoes and Janes to get their test results. And other people got to wait days or weeks. If you wait 16 days, you probably you might not have it anymore.
Yeah.
You got to wait that long. And I've wondered about that. And, you know, we talked about this too, about making exceptions for quarantine. If somebody does have it, you've seen this, where coaches have asked for exceptions or leagues or teams have talked to there. And there are a few that are making exceptions.
Yeah.
And that has to rub people the wrong way, doesn't it?
For sure.
Like, why can't I have an exception? Those players or coaches are well off financially. Why? I need my job, man, to pay rent. Why am I not given an exception?
Yeah.
There we go.
It is. Well, box. I mean, you just think of, I mean, all the stuff we've heard about, whatever, you know, how long it takes to get tests back or shortage of tests or what this or that. And then it's like, how can you test like 80 NFL players per day?
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be at the training camp, you know, and like you're just going to get those tests right away. And then you'll get tested the next day again, every single day for at least 14 days.
Right.
And it's like, okay, I don't know how this is all going to work and how that's going to affect the normal, the right everyday person that is not a professional athlete or involved in professional sports.
How about this? When NFL teams report to training camps later this month, the Football League could be doing more than 24,000 tests a week. Add to that Major League Baseball, the National Women's Soccer League, the National Hockey League, WNBA, NASCAR, the PGA Tour, and the two leagues operating in Orlando. And professional sports could soon be responsible for roughly one out of every 110 tests performed in the U.S. each week. Not only will those additional tests tax an already burdened laboratory system, but also the leagues will be cutting deals to have their tests expedited, pushing past hospitals, schools, and drive-through testing sites. Dr. Burrows says, I'm a huge sports fan, so I love that they're trying to bring sports back, but at the same time, I have to wonder if it makes sense right now. This is corresponding to a spike. If this did not correlate to a spike in our COVID positivity rates, it'd be different. Fair points. Fair points being brought up by that doctor, no doubt about it. And why are these people more important than others? Well, that's the question I think a lot of people have said. That's what, I mean, let's think about it. That's Black Lives Matter movement. It's basically about that. You know, people are treated better and not profiled and this and that. And we know that people that have more money are treated differently.
Yes.
Regardless of color of skin. If you got, I mean, and we know by the color of skin you get treated differently in this country. But not only that, but it depends on your wealth. And if you've got money, well, like I've said all along, great example to me is simple. If O.J. Simpson was some schmuck on the streets, okay, and I don't mean to be mean to anybody on the streets, but if he was just Joe Blow that was on the streets, or if he was a guy that was, you know, his name's Jack and he works at a convenience store, and he would have had what happened to him that O.J. did of being accused of murder, no way would he got off. No way. Wouldn't have been able to afford an attorney. I would have a public defender who wouldn't have been very experienced in it. And that's why some people get on death row, and because they have nobody to represent them that knows anything, because they can't afford representation. So people that are poor have less of a chance to defend themselves if they're wrongly accused than somebody that's rich. And that's what happened to O.J. You can't tell me any differently. O.J. had enough money and assets to where he could get the best legal team imaginable and get off with murder. And yes, you can say, well, come on, he wasn't found guilty of murder. Well, you can say whatever you want. The killer's still out there, by the way.
Months later, he was found responsible for it,
right,
anyway.
In the civil court. So So yeah, wealth is always treated differently. You know, we talk about the gender inequality, right? We've talked about that on the show before. Mm-hmm. We talk about the, if you want, I don't know the best way to say it, the color of your skin inequality, all right? And there's no doubt there's the inequality between wealth and poverty. And in this case, to me, it's pretty simple. That's what this is.
Mm-hmm.
That's what this is. I mean, what's more important? You know, people going back to their jobs and the economy as a whole in this country, or sports or entertainment? Well, clearly, based on all this testing, they're saying that that's more important. There's no denying that.
The story I read about the NFL says they have a deal with some medical company that, you know, for however many tests, you know, and it's like, are you going to pass that up, like $1 million deal to do all this testing? Because you're going to get all that money paid into you from the NFL.
Right.
And so, hey, this money's coming right away. Like, I don't have to worry about it. I'm going to get paid for all these tests. We're going to go $125 per test for anything that goes above what the NFL is contracted for.
Right.
And I'm going to get all that money. Yeah. Let's expedite this. Let's get it done. Let's get the money.
It's about money. It's what it is.
You could go off on a tangent about healthcare should not be a business, okay?
No, sure.
But it is. You know, they're making a business decision that shouldn't be a business decision, but that's what they're doing, and it's the way it is in this country.
You can't tell me people with money haven't been able to move up in line to get transplants.
Yeah.
We know it's supposed to be illegal, but you can't tell me that hasn't happened. The NBA and MLS have contracted with BioReference Laboratories, a private lab in New Jersey, to rush their results within hours. BioReference was also being used by the Florida Department of Health to assist in public testing at the massive Orange County Convention Center. But when the turnaround time results grew to 6 days, the state began sending the specimens to the rival lab, GenetWorks. BioReference was so backed up partly because they were doing MLS soccer testing. You can see how complicated all this is. The MLS has about 1,300 players and staff quarantined in Disney Resort, where they're being tested every other day. The NBA has been doing several hundred daily tests on players and staff for 22 of its teams quarantined in another Orlando resort. The number of tests isn't as big of a problem as how swiftly the tests are processed, though, with the leagues pushing ahead of people who in some cases have been waiting weeks to find out if they have COVID-19. As one doctor says, it really sends a very questionable message about what we're prioritizing in this country. I would agree.
Yes.
I would agree. No question about it. So, and you know what? You sit there and you listen to the show right now. You're like, whatever. I want sports. Yeah, odds are you don't have COVID-19 or you don't think you have COVID-19. But if you were somebody that wasn't sure if you had it and you took a test, just like any other test you take, wouldn't you want to know what you may have as soon as possible?
Yes.
And what causes more undue stress? The unknown.
Yes.
You want some closure. Either I have it or I don't have it. But this, what if I do, what if I don't, for 16 days in this case for this one person, that's ridiculous. And yet, we talk about we're not going to have more money for testing.
Yeah.
We're talking about how some people say we test too much, which is ridiculous. Sorry, I don't know how you feel, but I mean, you think there's too much testing? I would totally disagree with you. I'd say there's not enough testing. And it is true. The more tests you have, the more positives you have. That applies to any disease.
Oh, yeah.
To anything. The more tests you do. I mean, the more tests I take, the more likely I am I'm going to fail one. I mean, you know, the odds are there, no doubt. But this is an issue. And that's the other thing. If you're already short on testing in some situations, and then athletes are taking up all these tests, and they got to take them over and over and over throughout the season, are we going to have a situation where we have a big shortage on testing for regular people like you and me? I don't know. I don't know. But that has to be a bit of a concern, I would think.
Yeah, and I'm guessing, you know, the job of people in the medical field right now is to make sure you're producing tests, make sure you're producing things you need to do for the pandemic that's going on right now. But again, you know, as we talked about kind of when this thing started, a lot of the other stuff in the medical field is being pushed to the back burner. A lot of the other appointments that you need to get are being pushed to the back burner. A lot of the things that you would, you know, surgeries, I know for a fact, have been pushed back.
I'll give you an example. Former Dolphin safety Rashad Jones is going to have to retire because he can't have neck surgery because COVID-19 pandemic, it's in front of his elective surgery.
Yes.
So he can't
play.
My
mom was supposed to have her surgery much earlier than she actually did.
My dad was supposed to have his a couple weeks earlier.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And so everything's getting pushed back because of this, too.
Mm-hmm.
And but again, so if that's the case, then we better have what we need for the pandemic if we're pushing things back for it.
Yes. And
I get it. That's
it costs to do testing. It costs to have the test, or you got to get the equipment and the PPE and the testing supplies and everything. And that was one of the biggest problems the state of Kansas had to deal with right off the bat. Lack of testing.
Yeah.
They didn't have what they needed. You can't test somebody if you don't have the test.
Yeah.
Or the supplies to do it. So, you can go every which way come Sunday with this whole situation and conversation. Somebody told a good friend of mine, he's a sports talk, in Kansas City, and said, man, why'd you guys always talk about COVID-19 on your show? It applies to every single thing you're talking sports-wise. Yeah. It applies every single thing, almost. It applies to testing for getting sports up and going. It applies to positive tests for athletes that we report on. It applies on whether you're going to have a season or not. It applies on negotiations between the NFL and NFLPA, MLB and MLBPA. It applies to whether there's fans in the seats. It applies to regular people just trying to get tests, as we just explained. It's a wide-reaching, they call it a pandemic, and COVID-19, it applies to sports, and you cannot talk sports without talking about it. It's impossible.
You can't talk life right now without talking
about it.
Right,
I know. That's the thing. Like, if you're sitting here yelling at people on shows, quit talking about COVID-19. Well, what do you talk about?
Then you don't want to listen to anything.
You don't want to hear anything about COVID-19. You're sick of it. You're tired of it. Yeah. We get that. Everybody gets that. But that's not going to change anything as long as it's as an issue in our country.
Like, you should probably just go ahead and turn off the radio in Kansas City
and
if you're
complaining
about
the radio
show.
Yes.
Because you're not going to.
Right.
It's not. It's there. It's everywhere.
Right.
That's every sport, everything in life right now is being dictated by it.
No question.
How we move forward with everything.
Right. Well, we just talked about our school situation.
Sports,
not even sports, schools. Obviously, mask in businesses. It affects businesses. Some businesses in the country back to 25% capacity, which hurts their bottom line clearly.
Mm-hmm.
Restaurants, bars, and so forth and so on. So about the only time it doesn't apply is when we talk about Mahomes' big contract or Jones' big contract, but there's still an effect of that. And that is, will they even play this year because of COVID-19? And then, what happens with their contracts if there is no revenue coming in? And what happens down the line if the salary cap number goes down because of lack of revenue? And then the Chiefs are really in a tight spot.
Yeah.
Because they basically have a $198 million cap for each team. That might go down to $188 next year or even less. Who knows? So even when you talk about something, the tentacles spread eventually to somehow bringing that horrible thing up again, COVID-19.
Yes.
I would love to avoid it. I really would. I guess the only way to avoid it is, as you said, turn the TV off, turn the radio off, don't read the paper, don't do social media, just become a recluse.
Yeah.
And that would be the way to avoid it. Yeah. Otherwise, I don't think you can.
I don't know a whole lot of people that are doing that.
No,
so,
I'm not. I don't either.
And that's just kind of like human nature sometimes. Like, people complain about it, but they're still listening, they're still watching, they still want to know what's going on.
Oh yeah.
They just need their way to vent, and that's how they do it.
Yeah, like I've said before, when the strike happened in 94 in baseball, that's it, I'm done with baseball. I'm like, whatever, I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah.
Because how do I know that you didn't turn it on a week after it restarted?
Yeah.
I mean, some people I think are honest and they didn't, but eventually they did come back to baseball. I would bet you 95% of the people that said, I'm done with baseball, are back. I would be willing to bet on it.
Yeah.
But you'll never get an honest survey of that because people will lie. Well, that's what I said. So, I haven't watched baseball, even though I did last night.
Yeah.
So, we can say all these things and act tough and whatever, but the bottom line is you can't avoid it as much as you would like, unless you become a recluse, as we just talked about. And even then, I think it may be difficult.
Yeah.
You run into one person and they bring it up. Boom!
So,
darn it! I got to go back in my hole.
Yeah.
What do I do? Where's that rock? Where's that cave? All right, the State Board of Education of Kansas will vote on the executive orders on Wednesday following a 24-hour review, according to one report. A 10 a.m. meeting is scheduled for tomorrow, and that'll give us a little more clarity. If the Board of Education approves what the governor and the executive orders and the plan, then those will go into effect, which would mean that there's no school until after Labor Day for the state of Kansas for public schooling, and that the face mask covering mandate as well that applies to schools, including private and public schools, that would go into effect as well. So that's what we'll wait. So to me, that's next shoe to drop, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
We got to wait. We're waiting now on the Kansas State Board of Education to review everything, and look at these orders, which are posted for you to review as well on our website, kdcountry94.com. And we will, at some point tomorrow, perhaps have a vote on that. And if five of the 10 Kansas State Board of Education members vote against it, then it in essence, maybe I got the wrong terminology here, override or block the delay that the governor is wanting to put on starting schools until after Labor Day. If six vote in favor of it, then odds are then we're going to probably be looking at doing that. But there are some other extra wild cards to the situation, especially if the State Board of Education votes against it tomorrow. So that's the next shoe to drop. Once that shoe drops, then you will eventually, whether it's Keisha immediately or whether Keisha is going to wait till the end of the week or wait till next week, then you may hear something from the Kansas State High School Activity Association. But I would be stunned if they come out with anything specific until they know what the State Board of Education is going to do. And then once they do, they can move forward. And if the Board of Education, the cleanest thing to this whole thing, and it's not that I'm hoping for this, because I understand both sides of it, I truly do, but the cleanest thing to happen to make things as simple as possible would be the State Board of Education to go ahead and approve it, to say, okay, we're on board. That'd be the simplest thing. But you talk about making things murky would be if they go against it. Delay of what the governor wants to do with schools, and then all of a sudden individual counties and schools decide, hey, I'm going to start school August 21st. Oh, I'm going to start mine 24th. I'm going to start mine August 28th. I'm going to start mine August 15th. Just kind of like what you have already in regards to when schools are going to start. And then some may say, oh, well, you know what? We're just going to do our own thing. We're going to wait till after September 4th. Kind of goes back to a mass mandate, whether opting in or opting out. Goes back to stay-at-home orders, this and that. And it could be the same thing with this if the Kansas State Board of Education votes against the executive orders that the governor presented yesterday at her press conference. So stay tuned. Wait for that result. Then if you're into sports and high school sports, if that's what you're really worried about, eventually you'll hear something from Keisha. I don't know how soon, and I don't know how closely Keisha talks to the State Board of Education. You know, we don't know.
I would hope they're a little closer than what the governor is.
I would hope so, too. I would hope so. But
from what it looks like, anyway.
We don't know. On the surface, it appears that Keisha and the governor's office aren't in tight communication, at least not up to this point. But and maybe that'll be a factor in Keisha saying, we're going to do what we want to do. I mean, who knows? I so many moving parts. Take a deep breath. Enjoy the rest of your day.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.